Hello and welcome to Inside the School District, a weekly discussion providing you with relevant news, recent developments, and must-have information about what's happening inside the Mat-Su School District, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Good morning. This is Jillian Morrissey, the Public Information Officer for the Mat-Su Borough School District, and this is Inside the School District. And I have a really special guest in the studio with me today. It's Mary Putnam from Student Support Services, and she is a resource specialist for Student Support Services, but she's also our Deaf Ed Coordinator. And I'm really excited to have Mary in the studio today because we get to talk about one of my favorite topics. In my previous life in the district, I did some recruitment, and I got to work with Mary specifically on supporting our deaf education program through finding teachers and sign language interpreters. So good morning, Mary. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with a little bit about, can you tell us about generally our deaf education program here in the Mat-Su?
So we offer programming for students preschool through transition programs. So that's up to age possibly 22. We currently have three programs that are going. One is at Shaw Elementary, and the next one is at Thielen Middle School, and then the third one is at Colony High School. And we have them centrally located so that we can take our supports and resources in one school building, and we will bring students into that building from across the district to be able to receive those supports versus sending them out to a variety of school settings. Believe it or not, the supports that are needed, like a deaf ed teacher, interpreter, are hard to come by and hard to find those qualifications in our staff. And so we find that we can meet the needs of the students easier when they're located in one building.
That's really interesting. So really the track for a student is going to be starting at Shaw, going to Thielen, and then ending at Colony.
Okay. And it's really based on student needs. So we have other students that might have a hearing loss that isn't as significant to the point where they need direct supports from a deaf ed teacher or a sign language interpreter. They may be using oral communication, and they're able to move through their boundary school setting with just the support of the audiologist. So it really depends individually on every student and what their needs are.
Interesting. So how many students are we serving?
As far as the students that attend our district-wide programs in those three schools, we probably have between 10 and 15 students. So the population of students is very small, but it requires a fair amount of staffing to provide the services they need. If a student communicates mainly through American Sign Language, they're going to need a sign language interpreter in every class that they take. So that's a pretty significant support service that they need. And that's on an average. I mean, our program is small, but you know, we have a large school district, but realistically, I would consider us a rural program for deaf ed services. We do have the state school for the deaf that's located in Anchorage, again at Rush and Jack, Clark, and East High School. So, and they probably only have about, I'm going to just say 30 students across those three levels. So, you know, I would say we're comparable in that we are a smaller district, and so those are how many students we have. And then we have a lot of additional students that are considered hard of hearing who are out in their boundary schools. I don't know that exact number. I don't work with those students very often. The audiologists are the ones who work the most with the students out in those schools.
So they can be more integrated into their neighborhood school or wherever it is that they're attending school.
Yeah. And the key there is because they're using the same communication as everyone else is in their building. They're speaking, they're using their auditory skills 100% of the time, and they're not relying on sign language interpreters.
I have to admit that before the school district, I had no idea about what support students we're getting to be able to work inside public schools and be served and get an education. And one of the things that was startling to me was going into the preschool program over at Shaw Elementary that was then flowing into the elementary program. And I was hoping you could just talk a little bit about what these classrooms look like to give people a real sense of how we're providing services.
Well, just a little background on deaf education. It's somewhat changed over the years in that previously, before technology, it was easy to know what direction you needed to go in your learning in school. If you had it, and it typically depended on the extent of your hearing loss. So if you had a severe to profound hearing loss, you usually were going to learn American Sign Language. That was going to be your main mode of communication. And you went into classrooms that provided that type of instruction. But today, because of technology, we now have cochlear implants. So almost all of our students end up going and getting a cochlear implant when they're an infant.
Can you tell me, can you tell our listeners, what is that?
So a cochlear implant is a surgical procedure where they go into they literally drill in behind the back of your ear through your mastoid bone and go into your cochlea, which is this shell-like organism, whatever, in your head, which is where how you hear. Typically how we hear is sound waves come in our ear. They hit our eardrum, which then vibrates the three bones that are in the middle of the ear, which then causes the fluid in our inner ear to move, which then goes into the cochlea, which is like this circular device in our ear that has all these nerves, these hairs that are inside of that. And as that touches those nerves, then the message is sent up to our brain, and our brain tells us what we heard. So all that happens in a split second. For most students, or for many that have a significant hearing loss, the damage is in the cochlea, and those nerves have been destroyed for a variety of reasons.
Through illness,
yeah,
or
it could be illness.
Birth defect.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it can be genetic. So there's a variety of ways. And then those nerves are missing. So when the sound goes in there, it's only picking up certain pieces of it. So you may only be able to hear low frequencies or high frequencies or loud sounds or soft sounds. So in a cochlear implant, they go in through the back of your, behind your ear and drill in through there to get to the cochlea. And then they replace those nerves with electrodes. So instead of having these hair fibers that circulate around the inside of the cochlea, they now have electrodes that are put in there. And then there's a wire that comes out to the surface of your head, and there's a little magnet that sits underneath your skin. On the outside, the child wears a hearing aid that also has a magnet, and they stick together through the skin. So then the sound waves go into this hearing device, which changes it from a sound wave to an electrical impulse, which then goes in through your head to the cochlea and then eventually gets to your brain. It sounds really complicated, and it is, but that's how complicated hearing is. It's amazing that we understand things when it goes through this big process to get to our brain. So they have perfected this, and they now typically encourage children to get that done. So the medical profession encourages this to get done.
At what age is that usually happening?
Well, today it's happening as young as a year old.
Okay.
They want it to be done as soon as possible because that's when the child starts hearing, quote, as normal as possible.
Okay.
There's a lot of controversy about cochlear implants
right.
from the deaf community. So the deaf community is not real supportive of it. They are thrilled that they use American Sign Language. They love it. It gives them free access to information. So parents have to go through this trying to figure out what to do. But the fact of the matter is most parents don't know anything about the deaf community. 95% of all children that are born deaf are born to hearing parents. So they have a deaf child. They learn they're deaf. And of course, they want them to be like them and be able to hear and talk. And so they are easily gravitated towards getting a cochlear implant. There are amazing things that happen, but there's two very diverse sides to this.
Mm-hmm.
I know this is a long way around to the question you ask, has changed how we now have to provide education. Before, it was very clear if they had this loss, we knew they were going to go down this avenue, learn American Sign Language, use interpreters in their life, and then we had other students that we knew based on their hearing loss were going to be considered more hard of hearing, develop their auditory oral skills and go out into the hearing world, and you'd never know they had this hearing loss. Today, we now have kids that they take their cochlear implant off. They're completely deaf. They put their cochlear implant on. They now hear at a normal level. And so we have to figure out in schooling, okay, now how do we educate these kids? Because now we have to do both things. So that being said, in our district, we believe strongly in using American Sign Language because that's the language that's used in the deaf community. It's most conceptually accurate way to sign, and so children can understand the message visually. So our preschool program is very unique in that we have a small group, but we have students that have the ability to hear when they use their implant or their hearing aids, as well as the families want them to learn to be fluent in American Sign Language. So in that program, we have a deaf ed teacher, we have a sign language interpreter, and we also have a deaf role model who is our, so it's actually a former student of mine. She's a great person and a great role model to have in there. So we have this aide that functions as a special education aide, but she also happens to be deaf, wears hearing aids, and so she's this really great role model. And we try to do that across the grades if we can, always provide that role model for students so they have someone to look up to. It's one of the best things you can do for anybody is to have someone who's like you to see, oh, they've excelled, they've made it successfully in life. So that program does a lot of really direct instruction with the students on language development, because most deaf children can't communicate very well with their parents, especially if they're using American Sign Language. Right. They typically come to school and they don't really have a first language developed yet. So at 5 or at 3, they would come to preschool. So we really try to hit hard language development and helping them develop their first language. So if it is American Sign Language, they then can start to develop their second language, which is written English and possibly even spoken English. So it's there's a lot you have to teach, but that early intervention is really, really important, because if you can get that really good base, eventually the goal is to have them be out and mainstreamed into the school setting, using an interpreter and accessing the curriculum with all the other students.
This is Jillian Morrissey, the Public Information Officer with the Matsubara School District. I'm here with Mary Putnam, who is our Deaf Education Coordinator, and we're talking about the deaf education services that we provide in the district. I wanted to keep following that thread a little bit, because one of the things that I think is really interesting is how much work is being done in that, and especially for early intervention for these students that are first coming in. What are some of the other targets for students through deaf education as they continue on? Because really, for some of those students, just giving them language is the first start, where so many hearing children grow up just having language. So what are some of the other targets as they grow and develop as a student?
Well, if you were to look at the students from the pre-K program we have at Shaw versus the students we have some seniors at Colony High School. They're out in the mainstream all day long, integrated with all their peers in their school, and they just have an interpreter that shows up for everything that they do, and they have access to that. And they do access the deaf ed teacher occasionally for supports on vocabulary related to, you know, content material. But, you know, the real focus is to help them become as independent as possible. Mm-hmm. It varies for every student. We have students sometimes that we call deaf plus, meaning that they're deaf and they also have additional needs in addition to being deaf. But the real goal is to, number one, give them as much language development as possible so that they can have a concrete, sound first language. And we also provide ASL instruction for parents. So at Shaw, we have Sharon Miranda, who works for HOPE in Anchorage and Bridges Navigator. So she does a lot of outreach in the state. She comes out every Tuesday morning and teaches an ASL class to the parents.
Wow.
And she's deaf herself. She went to Gallaudet College, and is really proactive person in the deaf community and in the state. And so she comes out. So we try to access resources as much as possible to bring out, because if we don't get the parents up to the same level, their child will surpass them by kindergarten, they'll have more right. ASL language than their parents will, because it's hard when you're working parents and now you have to figure out how to learn a second language to communicate with your child. So that's just another component that we offer. We also provide ASL instruction for peers. So at Thielen Middle School, the teacher, Sam Rickey, teaches an ASL class to the students at Thielen Middle School.
As a second language.
As a second language. The class is full. She's doing a great job. And then we also offer it at Colony High School. We teach ASL 1 and ASL 2. The teacher is Kathy Kappa. Again, the classes are just book solid. So
isn't it our number two language,
I think, in the district? I don't know that for a fact, but I know she teaches it all day long and the classes are full. And you can also access that class from other schools as well. You can come over to take that class. So, you know, we're just trying to promote that as much as possible throughout the school. And I think it's very well received by everyone. But also self-advocacy, I think that when people think of somebody as being deaf, that might be a bad thing. You know, personally, I have two deaf children that are 38. They live the same kind of lives as everybody else. Mm-hmm. They have children, they're married, they have jobs. We don't in our family consider deafness to be any different than hearing. It's just mm-hmm. different. And so we really try to promote that. That it's okay to be deaf. You can be just as successful as anybody else. So we try to instill that in our students that being different is great and it's okay to stand up and, you know, be deaf, and you just have to use different resources to navigate the world than what you do if you're, you know, speaking and using your auditory skills all the time. And we start that at a really young age. Like, we promote that at the little kids to be really proactive about who you are and what your needs are and to speak up for those needs.
It's fascinating too, as when I was doing recruitment with you and mm-hmm. out there, what I think is so interesting is that deafness is being expressed in different ways. And so some choose to keep their cochlear, some choose mm-hmm. not to mm-hmm. and just take off the outer part that people see. I found that so interesting that there's a choice of expression and how to move through the world.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the majority of us are hearing people. And I know through my journey of learning about deafness and getting an education in it, as well as raising kids, one of the best books I ever read was Deaf in America, that it was talked about the center. And so those of us who are hearing, our center of the world is hearing. And we perceive everything in the world from this hearing perspective. But when you're deaf, you perceive it differently. And so the trick is understanding how the deaf person perceives the world and realizing that what they maybe think is important is not the same as what mm-hmm. I think is important as a hearing person. It was really hard for me to learn that, because what I thought my kids should learn and do should be similar to what I did, because that was what worked for me.
That's your experience. Yeah.
So once I figured that out, you know, I could look at it completely different. My son got a cochlear implant when he was 10. He was one of the first prelingually deaf kids that got a cochlear implant, and he is adamantly opposed to them. Granted, today the technology has really improved. So, you know, I see both sides of this. I've met many kids with cochlear implants that have been very, very successful, moved on and totally enjoyed that. But they have this decision to make about where do they use it, where don't they use mm-hmm. it. But they can take it on and off, but it is an invasive surgery. And so many deaf adults believe that adults should make that decision, not we make it for our children when they're very young. But again, most hearing parents are coming from a hearing center. So, of course, they're going to want their kids to hear and talk because that's what they do.
Yes.
So it's just, there's just a lot involved in it. It's pretty complicated. And it's different for everybody. And I think the big thing is to just get information to parents as young as, you know, as early as possible. Get them involved in services so that they can start working on language development. The key is language. And we know that for students that have significant hearing losses, the easiest way to get that language going and the brain processing information is through visual information, which is often using your hands
American Sign Language.
And then later down the road, they can still develop auditory oral skills, but let's get them. We know that babies can start communicating and sign at a very young age, as young as eight months. Mm-hmm. And typically without that, if you have a significant hearing loss, you may not be having any language at all by the age of five if nobody's provided any intervention. So that intervention piece is important. The state does have early infant learning programs. The Valley has infant learning programs and people that then go into the home. So those are for children from birth to three.
Okay.
And so then services are provided in the home to help parents, you know how to navigate this. And I think it's always really important to also bring and help parents meet deaf adults so that they can see what deaf adults are like. When I first had my son, I had never met anyone deaf. I didn't know anything about deafness. And the only person I had ever seen that was deaf was a man in Mexico City that was begging on the side of the street. So that was my idea of where, oh my God, is that like where my son is going to go?
That's going to feel scary. Yeah. Like, where's the success?
It's important for parents with babies who have hearing loss to be able to meet successful deaf people, mm-hmm. to know that isn't what life has to be like. It can be really good. Yeah, it's a struggle sometimes when you meet hearing people that don't understand deafness. But if you can learn to advocate for yourself and get out there and stand up for who you are and your rights and be proud of who you are as a deaf person, you can have a great life.
Mm-hmm. This is Jillian Morrissey, the Public Information Officer with the Mat-Su Borough School District, and I'm here in the studio with Mary Putnam, our Deaf Ed Coordinator for the district. And I just wanted to give an opportunity for what do families do that are looking for deaf ed services here in the Mat-Su? Some people will maybe think that this is just too small of an area, mm-hmm. to be able to provide service. So how do they connect to the district and get support?
So the best thing I would say to do is call Student Support Services. And I'm going to give you that number right now. It is 907-746-9221. And I would ask for Mary Putnam, and then I can help you navigate the system. And typically, we're going to start providing services for students from three up. So if you have an infant, let's just say you've just found out that they have a hearing loss, they now give hearing assessments for brand new babies. And they can then say, hey, we think that your child has a hearing loss. You then should reach out to Infant Learning. And Infant Learning provides services from birth to three. Their contact number is 907-352-1276. And you could ask for Stephanie Tucker. And so those are the ways to get started on it. And both of those avenues can share with you all the different things that are available in our school district, in our state, and get you involved in, you know, parent organizations and those types of things that can be supportive.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Mary, for coming in. Sure. I know you have a busy schedule.
Yeah, it was great.
I really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for inviting me.
You've been listening to Inside the School District, a weekly discussion providing you with information about what's happening in the Mat-Su schools, moderated by Mike Malevsky. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.